Hello, everybody, and welcome to our office hours call for the month of March 2019. And for those of you who are new, I know we have a whole bunch of new folks who joined Body Balance. These are calls where you can come in and ask whatever questions you have. Wherever you are in whichever program you're working through, you get to ask questions. So and you get coaching and celebrate successes. We always love to celebrate successes with the community. For those of you in Body Balance, these are different than the calls that we have at the beginning of the month, which are more, there's a little bit of content at the beginning of those, and then there's open coaching and support. And these are just open coaching and support on whichever topic, whatever's coming up for you that you want to ask. What I do ask, though, is when you ask a question, when you type it in, or when you raise your hand and you start to, and I'll tell you how to do that in a moment, to ask a question, let me know which program you're in so I know what resources you have access to. Body Balance and ERC get access to almost, ERC gets access to everything, every program that I ever graded, but the Body Balance has access to the main programs, the digestion, blood sugar, adrenal, thyroid, and then all the basic pillar stuff. So you get access to a lot. If you're in just thyroid, then I'm not going to tell you to go look on, you know, the blood sugar for this. I'm going to tell you where to look in your own program for what you're, you know, what you're having a difficulty with or a question about or need support around. So I'm here to support you. I have team members who are on here too. Lynn is always on these calls unless she's on an airplane. She's here. And then we oftentimes have other coaches that are in our program, in our nutritional endocrinology program, or who are our personalized coaching program people. So they're on here as well. So I'm looking forward to hearing what's going on for you and answering your questions. And I usually like to start with whatever's in the Q&A before we start, which means those are the questions that people submitted in advance. So there are several ways that you can get your questions answered. One is, if you're on the phone or on the web call, you can type in *2, and that will show me your hand up, and I'll go in the order that they come in. The other way is in the chat. You can just chat questions in there. Those are questions that are seen by everybody, including Lynn and other coaches that are on there. So you may get your questions answered before I even get to them that way. And then the third way is there's a little Q&A box that's next to the chat. So when you're looking at your screen up in the upper right-hand side, you'll see a chat stream and a Q&A stream. The Q&A stream is just for me. So if you're trying to answer somebody's question that's in the chat or you want other people to see that question, then just put it in the chat. If we get a lot of folks on this call, what happens a lot of the times is that the chat goes flying by really fast because there's a lot of conversation going on. So what I ask is that if you've typed a question in there and I haven't gotten to it, go ahead and copy paste it into the Q&A part so I'll see it, because that's not quite as busy and it doesn't fly by me the way that the chat does. All right, so I'm ready to get started. I'm excited. And I'm going to go
This is Lynn. I just wanted to have everybody rest assured I have taken all of your questions and put them into the Q&A. So that part is all taken care of. And the one thing I would ask is that if people are putting their questions in the Q&A or if they raise their hand to talk to you, that they make sure you know which program they're in, whether it's Body Balance or ERC or the Grand program or whatever.
Great. Awesome. And if you're on here and you are a coach, but you're taking one of the programs for your own health, you are allowed to ask questions too. So all of our NEPT students, our nutritional endocrinology practitioner training, get access to all of our programs for themselves because we want our coaches to be healthy. We aren't like medical school and residency where we try to beat our people into the ground and make them work 72-hour shifts before they get out. We're really into self-nurturing. So if you're on that, but please don't ask questions about a client. Ask questions about you because that's what you're here for on these calls. So thank you. Thanks, Lynn.
You're welcome.
All right. So I'm going to see the questions, and I see some from, holy cow, you guys are busy. Okay. I'm going to start at the earliest questions and work my way up to the later. And we have Susanna on my mind. So Susanna from Austin says, I'm getting ready to do the fast elimination diet starting March 23rd. I'll do the rare foods diet because I feel successively worse and worse if a fast goes more than 36 hours. I have no safe foods at this time. So here's my question. Should I treat the rare foods diet in the same way that you treat the reintroduction phase? Should I eat a lot of the 4 or 5 foods for at least 3 days so I get an idea of whether I'm reacting to my elimination diet foods? My symptoms are falling asleep about an hour after eating, total intolerance to probiotics, probiotic foods except nut yogurt, which probably doesn't have much, feel extremely cold most of the daytime, then get hot at night when trying to go to sleep, generalized itchiness that can't be scratched, constipation, lumpy stools, but transit tests showed some charcoal within 24 hours and the rest came out at 48. Diet, I alternate paleo and vegan. I'm diagnosed with hypothyroidism. I was suspecting that from some of the symptoms you said. Can't exceed 120 milligrams of Marmor without getting heart palpitations and dysbiosis. So far, nothing I've done except rid of probiotics has helped me. Thyroxray 22, which is the irritable bowel SIBO, was completely clear. I can only watch the office hours for the first 45 minutes, but I'll watch the replay. Okay, so it's listen rather than watch because these calls are all just listen. But yay, Susanna, great. This is a great question. So if you don't do well when a fast goes more than 36 hours, so fasting wouldn't be your option. If you say you have no safe foods at this time, I'm questioning that. So are there any foods on the list? And for those of you who don't know what the rare foods diet are in Body Balance and in ERC, you're going to get to that soon. But it's basically you fill out a food frequency questionnaire and all the foods that you generally on a regular basis, you just don't eat. Like say you've never eaten quinoa, that would be one of your rare foods. Or say you eat quinoa twice a year. It's unlikely to be contributing to your symptoms. So if Susanna, if you have some foods that, if you don't have any foods that you've never eaten, you wouldn't know that. But what are those foods that you just really rarely eat? And that's what you put into your rare foods diet. And so, yeah, you would eat a lot of those foods because that's all you're going to be eating. So you're going to pick 4 or 5 foods to eat for at least 3 days, hopefully 3 to 4. But you'll be able to tell within that time period if you're reacting to any of those foods. If you can tolerate it, I mean, rather than a fast, if you can tolerate mono meals, that's going to be able to give you a better idea. So you sit down and you eat one food until you're full. And then at the next meal, you eat another food until you're full. It's kind of weird because it's not real life. But on the other hand, it is a good way to get to know that. So I would do your best in creating that elimination phase. I don't want you to be like overeating. Like, you know, if typically you would, an average person, normal person, anybody would never eat like 2 cups of nuts in a sitting. I mean, that would hurt anybody, whether you're intolerant to those particular foods or not, right? So keep it within reason when you do that. So you just eat, you know, you eat it regularly because there's only 4 or 5 foods and you're eating it over this course of the day. Pick the ones that you are least likely to suspect. You want to give, the whole idea with this thing is to give your gut a break, especially, you know, what you're saying here sounds like you've got some gut issues, and we really need to get to the heart of what those are. Intolerance to probiotics and probiotic foods, oftentimes, especially if it's accompanied by bloating and gas shortly after you eat a meal, could be associated with SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, right? So there's a bunch of stuff that you would want to do with that. And when you, I'm assuming you're in Body Balance because you're going through the elimination diet, which is, I think, step 10 or 11 or whatever, then you're going to be doing the gut right after that and really trying to get through to it. So we want to figure out a diet that you're on that isn't, at least isn't making your situation much worse. So trying to, you know, figure that part out.
Okay? Susanna is ERC.
Oh, Susanna. Oh, her name is spelled differently. Okay, Susanna's an ERC. Yeah. So you can definitely go through that. And go when we get, you know, in Body Balance, we're going to be working on digestion probably next month. And I think that would be a good thing for you to go through so we can guide you through step by step. Thank you. I figured she was in either ERC or Body Balance. Well, if she's in ERC, she's also in Body Balance because ERC gets access to Body Balance. Okay, so hopefully that helps. Oh, she misread it. So I don't know if she's on yet, but it looks like I should have waited and read her second question before the first. But we'll just let her know to go ahead and listen back. And if you want to, if she gets on and types into the chat, you can give her a kind of a summary of my answer, and or just tell her to get on the phone.
I think she was on the chat earlier, not too long ago, so she might actually be on.
She'll probably miss the first 15 minutes.
Yeah, but I saw her just maybe 5 minutes ago, but she may only be on broadcast because I don't.
Yeah. So ask her to call in. Put a message in the chat that says, "Susanna, when you come on, please call in," and then I can talk to her. We can really straighten it out. All right. We have 1, 2, 3 from Barbara. All right. Okay. So, question one: the results of my Dutch test show that my reading of progesterone are very low and estrogen almost non-existent. Would you suggest to do as have most of the common symptoms of low estrogen levels, which affect me quite badly? Yeah. So I thought we had gone over this, and I had a couple of more things I wanted to add to it when we got off the phone. I would recommend that there's a couple of things you can start with, and then these are things you can get over the counter. If you want to get on estrogen, it has to be through a doctor, unless you do specific things I'm going to tell you that you can do from over the counter. You can get progesterone either as a cream, a topical cream, or a company called Biomatrix has one that's called ProAdapt, and it's a liquid. And it says on there that it's for topical use, and I believe it's the same formula they used to have that was not just for topical use, but there was some FDA stuff that made them say that. So however you feel comfortable, you can apply it topically, or you can actually take it internally. And we double check with the company. I already did, and they said, well, yeah, it's not unsafe to take internally. That's all they could say. But you can take that ProAdapt. They also have one called Estradapt, which is just estriol. And estriol is the one we want to bring up because it's the safe, protective one, and so is progesterone. So before you'd even consider checking in with, an MD to get a prescription for the other estrogens, I'd recommend that you start with those two. Again, I'm not giving you medical advice. I'm just telling you what I would do if I was in your situation. And of course, you could check with your doctor to make sure it's okay. But based on what you've told me, based on what was in that test, I would consider progesterone cream or the ProAdapt from Biomatrix. Not 100% sure if they're available in England. They probably are. I know that you can get them through our DSS store, the Doctor's Supplement store, and they do ship overseas. So you can check out that. And then the estriol, I would say get their Estadapt, or you can get an estriol cream. They make them that are for vaginal use. With the estriol, I would probably apply it, actually both of them. I would apply them if you're going to do topical on the progesterone too. I would apply it around the labia because it's going to get you the best absorption. And if you're too sensitive there, you can apply it to thin-skinned areas like your wrists and your ankles and the backs of your knees and crook of your arm and things like that. In case you're suggesting go to a health practitioner, I want to ask if you think it's okay to contact Allison Grimson. Absolutely. Yeah, she'd be a good person to be in touch with. And she is in the UK. She's in a place called Lewes. It's down on the south shore, probably near the water. Let's see. ERC question number 3. I measure my pulse after food and take 3 days as you suggested, and I am reacting to see if I'm reacting to any foods which could be responsible for the cortisol rise in the afternoon, but there doesn't seem to be anything suspicious. What do you suggest we do next? So then if it's not food, if it's not like an allergic or sensitivity reaction to food, there's something else that's causing that to happen. So looking at I would look at your situation, look at your environment, look at the typical responses, like what's going on in the afternoon? Is there anything stressful that happens? It could be something as simple as, there's a construction crew that makes all kinds of noise, and it's really a noise stress in the afternoon. And then what else? Your sugar. I'm assuming you're measuring your sugars and you're not getting like a dip and then a spike. So I would certainly measure from right before you eat your lunch, or you actually do your first meal as your, it's your really your late breakfast, but right before that and all the way till, you know, 3, 4, or 5 hours after, just to really keep monitoring and seeing if there's any weirdness going on with the blood sugar, to see if there's anything that's in your sugar levels. And then the other thing, it's going high in the afternoon. If we're not exactly sure why, we could do some gentle things to calm your insides. It may be something inside. It may be, maybe you have a parasite or some sort of an infection that kind of worsens in the afternoon. As the day goes on, the temperature generally tends to go up. I would say something that's gentle that could help to bring the cortisol levels down. There's an herb called magnolia, and magnolia has that ability to calm the cortisol reaction. And I would look into magnolia. You might be able to get it as a tincture, a tea, and it's magnolia flowers. Okay? So those are the things that I would suggest as a starting point. Cynthia, when a client is just plain frozen, they know they need to make changes, or completely overwhelmed, they don't have the energy to get moving, is it reasonable to just have them do one thing they can this week to start with hydration, getting water intake up and incorporating teas? Oh, yeah, Cynthia, absolutely. And again, this is a question for a client. We're supposed to be asking questions for you, but I'm answering this one because it applies to so many people in these programs, is that when you're overwhelmed, you just can't take action. You get frozen. And start with one thing, just one thing you can be successful with. Now, what happens is, you know, you may feel frustrated with me if I keep asking you about your water. Like, I could go back and say, Barbara, how's your water intake? Go back. And I know Barbara is pretty good about it. So, Barbara, if that's not an issue, no big deal. But it's like really going back to the basics, right? Getting water intake up, incorporating teas, you know, especially if, like, you tend to be very hyper type person, very anxious, then incorporating some of those calming teas like lemon balm and milky oats and chamomile and things like that to just keep the hydration up. Yes, I totally support that in everybody here. If you don't have your water intake up, if you're not hydrating, forget about working on all the advanced stuff. Just get going on that. It absolutely is critical. Absolutely. So next one is Rebecca. Hi, I may not be able to make the call, so here's my question. I just joined. Yay! I have had thyroid testing done, and it shows antibodies. Is it still better to go through the modules in order, or get tips on the thyroid module first and then work through the modules? Here's the deal. If you were to go through the summary booklet in the thyroid module, what you're going to see is that the only way you're going to get your thyroid balanced is if you get your blood sugar, your digestion, and your adrenals balanced. So the order does matter. Yeah. I mean, if there are some quick tips you want to do in the thyroid module, fine. But most of the things that you're going to find that are going to help the thyroid are things that are coming from other areas, right? And if you have antibodies especially, the most important thing you're going to do is to reduce the toxic load on your body, reduce the stress, and also get your digestion in order, because leaky gut is an underlying factor in all autoimmune conditions. So yeah, if you wanted to do that, go to the thyroid module, part 5, and just download the book that's called Thyroid Balancing. Thyroid Balancing or Thyroid Balancing Step by Step, something like that. And just read through it, because it's going to give you an idea of all the different things that can go wrong. And the step by step will include: get your digestion in order, reduce the toxic load, get your stress under control, get your blood sugar balanced. So there is a method to my madness in doing that. So thank you. Okay, Gail. Best way to patient to gain, not lose weight while helping liver, gallbladder cleanse, poor tolerance of fat, minimizing grains, best protein powder during parasite cleanse. Okay, so here's the thing I'm going to tell you. Let me make sure I'm on the right call, because there's a second question that's come in about, I was thinking maybe this is an INE office hours call, but I was wrong. But for anybody who's having trouble, anybody here on this call that's having trouble with gaining weight versus losing weight, it's a common problem. It's not it's not as common as people needing to lose weight, but here's the deal. It's hard. I mean, I really feel for people who have to worry about, you know, putting on weight. I mean, all I have to do is eat and I can gain weight, right? I have no problem with that. And sometimes the metabolism is so high that it's really hard. So the best way to help them is to make sure that they are, that they're eating easy to digest meals, that they're making sure that there's, sufficient calories in each meal. And if you can't eat too much at one time, and that seems to be the case, I tell people who want to gain weight versus lose is the opposite of what I tell people who want to lose weight. With losing weight is spread your meals out as far as you can comfortably do, no more than 3 a day, 2 if possible, but spread them out really far. With gaining weight, you're going to have to eat more frequently because you are going to want to get the insulin triggered so the insulin can help you put on weight, right? And so that's the thing, is to eat dense foods. Shakes are great. Like, shakes are really awesome because you can pack a lot of things in and not have so much of the fiber to be able to, you know, make it difficult to have all that. And you can put in one thing I did with one person I worked with years ago who had cancer, and she was trying not to lose weight and trying to get good support, and the doctors were telling her to just eat candy bars and all kinds of garbage. Of course, she's going to gain weight with that, but that was going to make her cancer worse. So we created a shake, and I had her drink this shake 3 or 4 times a day. It had plenty of protein in it, so it had a good protein powder. It had, I think I had to put some coconut oil or MCT oil in there to support her gut but give her extra calories, and lots of green powders and things like that. Not as much fiber as I normally would recommend because the fiber fills. And then you can't eat anymore. So that's the stuff what I do. Minimizing grains and fats. So I would look at fats from the standpoint of MCT, because medium chain triglycerides are much better tolerated. They don't require bile to absorb. And the protein powder, it's the best protein powder is what's best for the particular person. So I don't think there's a best protein powder during a parasite cleanse. It's just what works for you, whether it be a fermented pea protein, a fermented rice protein, a sacha inchi protein, whatever works for the particular person. So she's just going to have to play around with them, buy the trial sizes first, see which ones sit best. Frances says, I went to a skin doc for a rash on the back of my neck. I mentioned on a call last week. She called it neuropathic pruritus. She said it's the nerves in the spinal column get irritated and break out. I have about 10 little breakouts. Ever heard of this? Thanks. So whenever I hear of a diagnosis, I always break down the word. So neuropathic is of origin, nerve origin, and pruritus is itching. So she just said your itching is nerve related. That's all that word means. So the nerves in the spinal column get irritated. So here's what I hear when I hear nerves in the spinal column get irritated. Get yourself to a good chiropractor and get your spine adjusted, because when those nerves get irritated, oftentimes it's because of what's called a subluxation in the spine. And there's a restriction in the motion between the joints in the spine, and then the nerves get irritated. You'd also want to have a spinal evaluation to see if there's something called stenosis, which is a compression of the canal where the spinal column goes through, or, you know, looking at imaging to see if there are some specific areas. Now, if that's the case, it would be in a specific area, and you could tell what area it's having. So you said it's the back, on your back, right? So based on where it is on your back, if you were to go to somebody who's trained in that, like a chiropractor, they would be able to know which nerve roots maybe having a problem and help you get those in balance by adjusting them and then giving you specific exercises and things like that for that. And of course, anything pruritus, right? Pruritus is itching. Inflammation, gastritis is inflammation in the gut. Wherever you have an itis, that's inflammation. So you want to be looking at all the ways that you can support yourself in an anti-inflammatory diet and lifestyle, and making sure that you take out the inflammatory foods. And we have lists of those. I don't know which program you're in. I think you're in Body Balance. I can't remember. So you have access to those kinds of things. Ginger, turmeric, boswellia, balancing your fats, your omega-6 and 3s, so be really careful about balancing your 6 and 3s. If you have too much 6s, omega-6s, which are what's found in most of the vegetable oils, almonds, sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, things like that, those will have high levels of omega-6, plus meats. They have arachidonic acid, dairy has arachidonic acid, eggs have arachidonic acid, peanuts have arachidonic acid, and those are inflammatory omega-6 fats. So you'd really want to be making sure that your threes are in good order. You can be eating chia seeds, hemp seeds, flax seeds, walnuts, purslane, blue-green algae. You can be taking a supplement, an EPA DHA supplement to help support that, and that could be either an algae-based or a fish-based. But I think you have to look at those fats. If you're in body balance, there's trying to think of where that would be. It's, I'm pretty sure it's in the sweet spot, Lynn. Maybe you can help and let her know where to look, which module to look in for that omega-3-6 chart that we have in there. I know it's in sweet spot somewhere. So, you know, if you can find where that is and just let her know where to look, that would be great. Joseph, I suffer from extreme adrenal fatigue, the after effects of years of prednisone therapy. Recently, my DHEA level tested at 0.88, normal is between 6 and 7. So now I'm trying my chronic pure DHEA at least 300 milligrams a day. Any opinion? Keto doesn't work. That's a lot of DHEA. 300 milligrams a day. Here's what happens when you give that much. It basically turns on your own production. So I would be looking at doing a test to see where your adrenals are. I really like the Dutch test because it gives you all sorts of metabolites. So I'd be looking at the Dutch test, and I would be looking based on that at what the best supplementation would be. But when I help people to get on DHEA to support a situation like this, I'm looking at doses that are in the 5 to 10 milligrams a day spread out across the day, because that's the numbers that that the body produces. Whenever you give a hormone, it turns off your own hormone response. Okay, so it's basically the body saying, oh, there's plenty of that, so turn it off. And then when it goes down low enough, it'll turn it on. But if it's been turned off long enough, it can atrophy. So I would be looking at smaller doses than that. I like Biomatrix. They have a really nice sublingual, very well absorbed. And I think each drop is like 1.2. Best if you can get like a Dutch test. You can do a saliva test if you want to, but a Dutch test is what I'm really more in favor of these days. Cindy, what do you take as home remedies when you feel you're starting to come down with a cold or sore throat? Great question. In Vito, we did a really good talk on that a couple of months ago. I think it was in January. And I just like spewed my guts about what else I take. My first go-to is vitamin C. And I just start taking, I take a gram an hour. And usually by the end of the day, it goes away. I also have this throat spray by Herb Farm. And it's called Throat Coat. I don't remember. I have some right here. Carry it with me whenever I travel. Carry it with me when I'm speaking because it helps to soothe the throat. I'll also look at herbs like echinacea, Oregon grapefruit, and all sorts of things that will support your immune system. Garlic. You know, you can eat whole cloves of garlic, and I know it's hard to eat raw garlic, but that's what has the best effect, up to 6 cloves a day. How do you get that? Well, you make some guacamole and you squeeze some in there. You make a pot of soup and you put some in your bowl and then you squeeze some raw garlic in there and you spread it out over the day. So raw garlic is super, super good. I have a friend who takes some like pills. He'll just take a whole clove and he crushes it a little bit and then swallows it like it, you know, just takes it with water. And it usually kicks out whatever starting pretty quickly. There's a couple of other specific supplements that I've experimented with over the years, and, you know, I think they work. I just kind of throw everything at it and hope for the best, and usually it doesn't take over for me. So I'll look at, there's something called Russian Choice Immune, and I think it's allergy research, but if you just Google Russian Choice Immune, you should be able to find it. And then there's another one that changed the name, but it's by Gaia Herb. And I usually get the one in their professional line, and it was called Vira something or other. First Defense. That's what they changed it to, First Defense. And that's a specific formulation of echinacea that you take it right at the beginning, at the very, very, very first signs. So those are the things. Now, stop eating sugar and, you know, flour and anything that's going to affect the immune system for sure. Okay, Amila. Can you please tell me what kind of lab work I need based on my assessments? That's not something we could do on this call, and I would need to have your assessments in front of me. And that's something that you will, if you're in the, if you have the small group integration calls, that's something you can bring up on those. And yeah, you'll have to, we'll have to save that for an implementation call. Yeah, we have one at the beginning of April. And you'll have to get me those numbers in advance, like, so I can see it. So what you need to do is fill out that summary chart, and the summary chart lists each of them and has the numbers in it. And if you can do the online one, and then just give me the link to that, we can look at that on that call. Carmjit. Dr. Eva, what do you think of using elemental shakes for healing gut? Yeah, this is a great question. So a lot of the elemental shakes that are out there, specifically for SIBO, I'm not a fan of. They actually have sugar in them, some of them. I just don't think they're very high quality. I haven't seen one yet that's of high quality. But an elemental shake that you make yourself, I've worked with people on this. We just get a really simple protein powder, not a protein powder with 27 different herbs and fruits and everything else in it, but just, you know, Sacha NG protein or fermented pea protein or something like that. You start with that, and then you add some of the other things that that you need to make it through, right? So you can actually go on these shakes for 5 to 7 days to help heal the gut. And that's a good thing for somebody who does have trouble fasting. We had somebody ask that earlier, is to create one of those shake mixes and take that. I find that a combination of the simple and then fat, you know, some sort of fat, it could be coconut oil or MCT oil, because those things help to soothe the gut. And then a little bit of something green, like a spirulina or chlorella or a simple kind of green thing in there, and start with that and see how far you can go with that. I've worked with people and we've created these, you know, supercharged elemental shakes, and it works really well. So I like it, but I don't like any of the commercial ones. I just don't think I don't think anybody's really hit it. Joseph said, yes, I'm in body balance. Yeah. I've read most everything in the adrenal fatigue module, but have you done your Dutch test or a test like that? Let me know. And I'm going to be updating the adrenal fatigue module to incorporate more Dutch, because when I created that, it was before the Dutch test actually came out. Okay, so hi at gmail.com. Okay, questions. My son is 14 and has severe IBS and has lasted for years, but more acute recently. Would you recommend the same as adult? Yeah, so biggest thing, and especially hard with a 14-year-old, is that diet. It's like cleaning up the diet. You got to get the gluten and the dairy and the sugar out of his diet. You got to get the processed foods out. You have to have him eating simple whole foods. And with irritable bowel, it oftentimes helps to do some sort of a cleanse type period, and, you know, going to be a little bit different maybe for a 14-year-old, but where you're doing a lot of blended veggies and broths and juices and smoothies, and really helping the gut to heal down. And you want to find what's causing it. Like, what is it? Is it some out of balance gut microbial? Flora, is it a particular set of foods that are aggravating him? Is it stress? And it's usually a combination of all three, especially, you know, teenagers just going through puberty. That's a tough age. It's a stressful age. And they've got to learn to handle stress. So I would look at heart math, other techniques, whatever you can get a kid that age to do. It's kind of challenging working with them, and you don't have control over their diet when they're out, they're at school, they're at friends' houses. So it makes it really challenging, but it's really important if it's important to him to get over those symptoms, for him to go on a strict elimination diet, and then work on, you know, a little bit by little the gut flora slowly, because sometimes with irritable bowel, you can't put probiotics in right away. A safe one might be Bifidobacter, just pure plain Bifidobacter, because it's less likely to aggravate, just to start to create some changes in the environment. A lot of times people have trouble with those the probiotics, not because they don't need them, but because their gut is in such an imbalanced state that what happens is that as we put the good stuff in, it creates a war basically in the gut, and the microbes that we don't want there, they don't go out like just, oh, hey, you've tried me out, bye. They go out kicking and screaming, and it can create some turmoil. So it's really important to move slowly, especially because in a 14-year-old, you're dealing with gaining trust, and that's a tough one. All right, so I see Vanessa. Okay, struggling with staying through the night. Okay, let's see. So Vanessa, I want to give you something, and Lynn can put a link in there. A friend, colleague of mine has created something he calls Brain Time, and it's you just put in headset, it's an online thing, and you listen to these sounds, and the sound is a brain retraining kind of process. And I've had a few of our coaches who, we had him come in and talk to our coach support group, and they tried it after listening to him and after not sleeping through the night for decades, or sleeping through the night. So, I mean, it's really a matter of finding out why, right? We always want to get to the root cause. And there's a number of things that could prevent someone from sleeping through the night. It could be cortisol being high right before going to bed. It could be that there's memory deep in the subconscious of some, you know, traumatic events that happened in the middle of the night. And a lot of people who have, you know, a history of sexual abuse or a history of like drunk parents fighting in the middle of the night or having been burglarized in the middle of the night, just not feeling safe through the night. So that's the thing to explore. And, you know, really looking at making sure that you are doing those heart math type relaxation things or meditation right before going to sleep. Looking at your cortisol levels. I don't know if you've tested your adrenals recently. I know you had tested them in the past and discovered that you were in adrenal burnout, but looking at those numbers, looking at a Dutch test could be very helpful with that. It could be low levels of progesterone and estrogen. It could be excess insulin at night, insulin production. So if you haven't already done so, oh, you already did. You tested your insulin. It was a little bit high. It wasn't very high. It was like a 6, I remember. So it's probably not that. Things that you can do during the day that will go through in the blood sugar balancing, there's a whole module in there. So if you want to skip ahead to that, there's a whole set of modules actually in videos and stuff. Well, it's one module, but a set of videos in that module, that I would look through. I think it's module 3 in, the sweet spot part, the blood sugar balancing part. So I would look at all those things. Melatonin production is another issue. If you are indoors all day and you're not getting out in the early morning sun, the melatonin doesn't go back down when it should, and then it doesn't come up when it should. Our lifestyles are not conducive to good melatonin support. You know, if we lived out in nature, we would be going down, we would experience darkness when it got dark. We don't, right, because we live in this world where we have lights, which is great. I love it, but it changes the rhythms. Looking at other things that affect melatonin. So, you know, watching TV or being on your cell phone or an iPad or a computer until right before you go to bed. So keeping a couple of hours gap there. Doing some wind down routines in the middle of the, in that later evening, like the 2 hours before. Warm baths with lots of those relaxing herbs, lavender and such like that. So I don't know exactly what you've been doing, but I would definitely make an inventory of all the things that you have been doing. And let's take a look at that and see if there's some additional things that you can do. So I threw out some things there. Definitely check out the Brain Time because we've seen some really good results. And the doctor that I know that created it has been working in that area for many, many, actually many decades, 30 years. So he's done a lot of research and really has created a product that I think is really good. It's called Brain Time, and Lynn will put the link in. Okay. Was there Oh. Okay, was that you that I just answered? Did you put that in twice, Vanessa? Because it said hi at Gmail, and then it says Vanessa. So if that's so, there's two of you in here. So go, you know, and listen up to what I said about just previous to that. Cool. Really fresh. Lots of questions. So what I'm going to do is come on. I like to switch back and forth. So type in your questions if you have them. I answered the questions that had been submitted early on. I'm going to go to who's here and raise hands. And I see three. I see Gail in California. I see Wu Ka in New York. And I see Susanna. Good. Okay, good. Susanna, I'm glad you're there. All right. So Gail. Right? I'm on trying to unmute you. There seems to be a delay, and sometimes I hit it twice, and then I remute you. Okay, where'd you go? Whoops. Oops, Gail disappeared. Oh, wait, here. No, she didn't. I just undid her hand. Okay. Hopefully this is going to unmute.
Did I disappear?
Hey, there you are.
Yay, hi.
Yay.
So I still want to get the monitor that you put on your arm. I had a 14, and it was goofy. Had a 14-day. The Libre, is the 10 still the one to get, or do we get the 14-day? Do you know?
I would still get the 10. I haven't gone back to try the 14-day because I went through three different patches, and they all were wacky, and I had one of them on at the same time as the 10, and it was like 30 points off. So I don't trust it. So okay. I would definitely ask your doctor that prescribed the 14 to please prescribe the 10 because you really didn't like it, and you heard from others that they had the same kind of problems, and you'll wait until they get it perfected.
Thank you. And the other question was, which I went to the website on labs, and I didn't see any for heavy metals. Did I miss it?
Yeah, you did. Because there's look under doctor's data. There's a hair test under doctor's data.
Okay.
And there's a urine test under doctor's data, and you can choose which one. The hair tends to be easier to get. Hair is a good source of it. Sometimes, if we really suspect heavy metals but the hair doesn't show it, then we'll sometimes do what we call a challenged urine. But I think starting with the hair, it's $99, really inexpensive, is where I would start.
Okay, good. Thank you.
And you're welcome.
They have the parameters on the hair. It has to be unbleached and stuff.
So sometimes if you have it colored, you can do pubic hair. So unless you dye your pubic hair, I don't know. I bet you've got
today.
Yeah, so they'll tell you if you have dyed hair, you either have to wait, and you have to wait for it to grow out a good inch because you're going to cut it right at the scalp.
Okay.
Okay, and they give you the whole parameters of how to do that. But you can do pubic hair. And
okay.
if not, you can do the challenged urine, but it's a lot more difficult to do, and it's more expensive. And anyway.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Trying to close your line. And I'm going to open up Wu Ka. Go ahead and speak. Wu Ka, did I say it right? In New York? No, it's still not. I'm trying really hard.
Hi.
There you are. Hi.
Hi.
Yes,
hi. How are you?
Hi.
Yes, this is Le Chao. Yes.
Oh, it's Le Chao.
I have a question.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, thank you. I have a question about since I've been eating plant-based since January, I don't get my period anymore. Could it be like a drain change in my diet or something?
Well, have you lost a lot of weight since then? Or lost a lot of body fat?
Yes, I lost. Yeah, I lost nine pounds.
Well, it's not a lot. I mean, you're not. Are you underweight now?
No, I'm not underweight. No.
No, you're not. Yeah. How old are you?
46.
46. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's been since January.
Since January.
Keep an eye on it. It could be related to less calories
and calories.
Not making your hormones as well. I would give it a few months and see. Make sure you're eating enough protein. Make sure that you're absorbing your protein so that you're sitting in a quiet place and, you know, maybe taking some bitters to make sure that you're getting enough.
Yeah.
And you have to make sure you're getting enough fat because your hormones do require
fat.
Right?
Uh-huh.
They require Yeah.
Uh-huh. And yeah. I had a lot of UTI from the IUD, so I had that removed.
When did you have it removed? Oh,
like
that could be related.
Now, last week. I had it removed last week.
Was it one of the IUDs that has the hormones in it?
No hormone. The Paragard, no hormone.
No hormone in it? Yeah, but that's an irritant to your uterus. So I would give it a couple of months, watch it.
Oh.
And then
because I had the test, the ultrasound.
Yeah.
I had the ultrasound and the doctor said that this is an ovarian cyst, but it's normal. I was kind of concerned about it because she said, oh, it's 2.9 centimeters, but it's normal. And she wanted to test again after I have my period, but I haven't had my period again.
Yeah, so ovarian cysts are not normal, but they're common. They do happen. Sometimes if it's just what's called a luteal, corpus luteum cyst. Corpus luteum is that, you know, that body mm-hmm. that happens, you know, every month when you get, to decide whether you're pregnant or not. But the corpus luteal cysts are common. I would never say normal. I would say common. Come and they go.
I don't see normal. Oh. Mm-hmm.
Well,
It's normal.
No, it's not normal.
Yeah.
It's not normal to have a headache, take Tylenol. It's not normal to be depressed.
It's not
normal to have a cyst on your ovary. But it is definitely a common occurrence. And that's what they confuse people thinking it's normal. All right. So you go back and you have a recheck it, right? And then you see, and I would say give it a couple of months to get your period. If you're not, then I would look at testing some hormones.
I have a blood work that I asked the doctor to test everything, all the hormones, like the FSH, TSH, whatever, all the hormones. That's related to,
Yeah. Did you get the results back yet?
Not yet, but I just had it tested on Monday.
So what you're looking for with when you get FSH, you're looking for it being high, because
high,
it starts to go high as you go into menopause. And
is it menopause? Is it hereditary? Because my mom had menopause when she was 39, and my sister, who's a year older than me, and she had early menopause, 40, 42, she had menopause.
It could just be menopause. It definitely could be perimenopause that you're entering into. Now, don't be surprised if you go 2 or 3 months without a period, and then you get a period, and then you go 2 or 3 months without. That happens sometimes for some women for a couple of years before it actually goes away completely. But if you have a family that's early menopause, that could be, it could very well be what's going on with you. So I would just keep an eye on it. I would eat, you know, really cleanly. I know you struggle sometimes with it. You know, you do well during the week, and then you've been when you go ahead.
Right.
And that's an emotional
thing
to be looked at. If you haven't looked at
why,
the why, right?
Going through over and over the module. Yeah, that's so important.
Yeah,
and
so
also
important.
I wanted to ask you, can I up my probiotic? I've been upping the probiotic because I was taking so much antibiotics. The doctor was prescribing me antibiotics nonstop for my UTI and also, you know, so it's just too much antibiotics. So I've been taking like 3 to 4 times probiotics. Is that all right?
Yeah, you can. And as long as you're not taking so much that you get bloated, because when you start to try to change it too quickly, then you know, you get the bloating. But if you're not getting bloating from it, then you can go with higher doses. Usually after antibiotics, I recommend high doses, like even up to 400 billion organisms a day for like a week and then back it down. But, you know, up in the range of 100 to 200 is not too much. So look to see how many billions of organisms. A lot of the probiotics only have like 2 billion, which is very, very low. And it's going to take a long time after an antibiotic to replenish.
Yeah. And I feel very bloated, too, after my meals. And I only eat like one meal a day now. I do 2 shakes. 2 smoothies, more breakfast and lunch. So
when
with my dinner, I tend to eat,
are you having your probiotic? What timing are you having your probiotic? Right before meals?
I have it in the morning, right before meal, right when I wake up, before meal and at lunchtime, and then before dinner at lunch, at dinner time.
Did the bloating start after
I eat the bloating?
Right.
But just only after dinner.
Only after dinner. So you're having shakes during the day and then the meal at night.
Yeah. Right.
And then what
and
we
the
have
bloating
is
just so.
I would be looking at
kind of blow. I could be overeating. I don't know what it is. It's
could be overeating.
Because that's my overeat. Oh, yeah.
It could be overeating. And don't, you know, the fullness versus over bloating is a very different thing. Fullness is like, oh, my God, I ate too much. You know, it's just really full, full. Bloating is that you barely eat anything and you get this discomfort that feels like your belly is
eating.
Expanding.
No, I feel my belly is hard. Yeah, expanding after I eat.
Yeah, so you want to look at what you're eating. You want to look at are you eating too much? Take some digestive enzymes and bitters before the meal, digestive enzymes during the meal to help break it down. Eat slowly. I know you have kids, little kids, and the hardest thing to do is to take your time and chew slowly because, like, you got to run after these
kids.
Running
around. Right.
Yeah. And you could just try, like, just try a few days of just having the 3 shakes a day. Don't have the meal at night.
Yeah.
Get the same results and calm it down and then go back and start to make very simple meals and figure out if there's anything particular. It might just be a particular food you're intolerant to, but it just might be that you're eating too much.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was just thinking, I almost forgot what I was going to say. With the meals. Oh yeah, I took some activated charcoal because of the gas, and I was eating kind of like overeating. So, do you think that could help too with the bloating and the gas?
It could, but you just got to say you took it when you had gas after overeating.
Bloating,
overeating,
overeating
the wrong stuff. I think that's the crux of it. Is to calm it down. When you're eating a meal, you should get to the point where not that you feel full by the end, and then you stop. You feel like, you know, I'm getting there. I think I'm about 80% there. Stop. Because generally,
it's kind of hard for me. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's what you're going to need to do. That's what you're going to need to do.
Yeah, that makes sense. I like how you said to try the shake 3 meals a day.
Yeah,
so
try
then
shake
slowly
3 meals.
Bring it back up. Yeah.
Exactly. And if you allow your gut to just calm down and heal for a while.
Calm down.
Mm-hmm.
That makes a lot of sense. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Sure.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. So that was, and now we have Susanna and then Karmjeet. I don't know how to say your name, but I'm going to unmute you. Okay. Susanna. Are you there?
I hear you. Yay.
Yes, I am. Okay. I actually didn't mean to raise my hand, but maybe since you had answered my question about the diet. I did go to see my doctor today. He is an alternative health MD, and he has decided that I need to have an ultrasound scan of my abdomen because he found a pretty sore spot there. And let's see, a heavy metals test, what else? And he and I talked about trying to go ahead and power through the 5-day fast. And, you know, when I hit the wall, and at that point I'm going to have a menu of things that I'm going to try, such as a castor oil pack, go take a magnesium sulfate bath, just anything to kind of try to distract me through the fasting, because I do so poorly on food. I just can't digest anything, and I feel so bad after I eat that we kind of agreed that if I can make it through the fast, that's probably the best way for me to go, just to give my gut a complete rest. So anyway, that's kind of what we're thinking now. And you know, I wasn't thinking that last week. Do you have any suggestions?
Yeah, I have a couple. I think it's a great idea if you can. I was going to ask you what actually happens if you go more than 36 hours on a fast. What are the symptoms you experience?
I just kind of feel like I'm climbing the wall, get a little anxious. I get really hungry. And, you know, APOE 4, double 4 person. So I am completely used to doing a 16-hour fast every day, or maybe even a little more. So I can do relatively short fasts with no problem at all. I can do 24 hours, no problem. And, yeah, I just felt really, really, really hungry, just slightly lightheaded. But what I'm thinking is I'll just go go to bed.
Up it out and go to bed. Sometimes that's a sign that you're trying to do too much. And if you are trying to do a fast for multi-days, it's a great idea if you can do it during a period that where you can just rest more. You know, I don't know if you work during the week or what your schedule might be, but, you know, sometimes I have people start it where, like, the first day you can do during a work day. But that second day, third day, like, do it on, you know, start your fast on a Thursday night or something, and then, you know, muscle your way through Friday, and then at Saturday, Sunday, you're home. What I will tell you, it was my experience in having done probably dozens of fasts. For me, the first 3 days are the hardest. For me, the first and the second day is the first day is the hardest psychologically, because I'll go, oh, forget this. I'm not going to do this. I'm hungry. I like the way that works. I'm going to eat it. You know, and so getting through the first day. But once I get through that first 24 hours, the psychological part goes away. But that second day is like, oh, God, I'm just getting used to this hunger. Oh, my God, it's hunger all the time. By the third day, that's some people it gets worse. It used to get worse for me now, but by the third day, I'm better. And I think it's because I've done it so much that my body keto adapts really quickly and I go to ketones. And so the hunger starts to go away. But most people say this, and it's been my experience too, by the fourth and the fifth day, you're like, oh my God, this feels so good. You just, the hunger is still there, but it's like, who cares? Like, it's an itch, you know, no big deal. But I will say that you start to feel so much better. The important thing in doing any kind of fast is how you reintroduce foods, especially with all the food intolerances that you've been having. Do you know what I mean? So you've got to be careful, like one food at a time, you know.
Right, and that's what I was going to do is kind of what you were saying with the mono diet. And I went through, I found the rare foods, and I combed through that and pitched out anything that had a FODMAP, anything that had glutamate, histamine, you know, the food chemical stuff that people can react to. I pitched all that out, and there wasn't very much left. But there's enough to probably take me through 2, even 3 weeks of, you know, adding one food at a time, waiting 3 to 4 days, and then doing another food in 3 to 4 days. You know, and so I'll probably lose some weight. you know, I'll probably lose some weight, but that's okay. It'll come back.
Right.
It always comes back. And one, I was looking at the Sacha Inchi plant protein as maybe something that to add in. I've never had it, so I'm hoping that because I do like protein shakes. That's something easy to do.
Yep, I agree with that, because I think that what happens is, too, as you're doing this elimination diet, you tend to, you know, the protein levels go down, and you don't want to start to lose muscle. So I would say that's a good idea. You can always make it taste better with a little stevia or something, or lohan, or, you know, cinnamon or something like that. Figure out what works for you.
Right, I may just have to toughen it, because I tend to overdo the so-called good sweeteners, and I have the sweet gene, and you know, those are some of the things I'm going to have to get off of.
But don't try to do it all at the same time, Susanna. So if you're trying to be like you're avoiding all this and this and this and this, and you're trying to just drink these horrific, you know, protein shakes that have no flavor, at least make it look something you look forward to, and put a little chocolate stevia in it or something. You know what I mean? And then work on the sweetener thing. You know, switch to the non-glycemic, the healthier sweeteners like stevia, lohan first.
Yeah.
And then
straighten
out, and then go back and take the others out.
Right. I don't do any sugars. But I do a tremendous amount of stevia, and, you know, I'll switch back to erythritol or Lohan. You know,
well, here's the thing, though, Susanna. You just said erythritol, and erythritol is considered in the FODMAP, right? So that would, I would say, stay away from the erythritol while you're doing this elimination. You can try it later and see, but stay away from erythritol. I'd stick with stevia and Lohan.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
But it sounds like a workable plan.
Yeah, it sure does. It sure does. And I think adding the protein powder is going to be a huge help.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Well,
good luck.
Onward through the fog, as we say in Austin.
All right. So who do you see in Austin? Who's a holistic doc you see in Austin?
I see Ted Edwards. He's like 80. Do you know him?
Yeah,
he's,
I know
80.
Yeah.
He's in his 80s. And he was originally in his, you know, free alternative days, he's a gastroenterologist. So, you know, that kind of made sense for me to, you know, to go back to him. I was seeing his partner who is working on the APOE4 conditions, but my gut, you know, just my gut hates probiotics, hates it, just won't tolerate it. And so the standard, remove and replace stuff just didn't work with me at all.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this about probiotics. Have you tried just plain Bifidobacter?
I did the D-lactate-free, which
that's,
I think maybe
combo.
I would have a.
It has Bifido, but it also has a couple of lactose in it. D-lactate-free.
Yes.
But see, and if that still causes you problems?
Yes.
Okay. See if you can get some Bifido alone.
Just Bifido.
Just
okay.
Bifido. And start with minute amount. Get a powder.
Right.
And start with a pinch.
Okay.
And then 2 pinches and 3 pinches. And in a year, you'll be up to a scoop. But just see how let your body get used to it slowly. Slowly.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I was taking minute amounts, but, you know, just the only thing that I've ever taken that I didn't have just a horrible reaction to was Saccharomyces boulardii.
Mm-hmm.
But that, I'm understanding that that's kind of a time-limited thing. And I also took Synthol to try to kind of clear yeast if that was part of my dysbiosis. And that, you know, I'm not sure that Saccharomyces boulardii is what I need right now.
Yeah, it usually is a short-term thing just to help you to reestablish some, you know, friends down there because it's not a normal inhabitant. It's a transient, but it helps with creating a balance in some people. But it is a yeast. It's in a yeast family. So for some people, it's a problem.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, good luck. Keep me posted.
All right.
Get on the call
right,
and keep me posted, okay?
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. You're welcome. Bye. Bye. All right, I'm going to Karmjit. Hopefully I'm not just completely messing your name. Go ahead and try to speak. Let's see if it's open. Not yet. I'm afraid to hit it twice because there's a delay and then I end up muting you. Okay, it's still not open. Let me try it again. There it goes. Okay.
Hi.
Speak. Yes, hi.
Oh,
hi,
awesome.
Yay.
Yay.
Did I say your name right? I hope I didn't mess it up.
You were very close. It's Karmjit.
Okay, great.
Yeah. And thank you so much for this call. This is the first one I've actually been able to join. I've just listened to the other ones. So this is awesome, the advice that you're giving. So I have two questions, if you're open to answering. So the first one is, so over the last 5 years, I've had lots and lots of treatments for Lyme, mold, SIRS, SIBO, hypothyroidism, had cancer, and just a bunch of things. Okay. And, and I've done lots and lots of treatments. And, you know, I'm better in some ways, but there's a number of things that still are not working. So one of them happens to be my gut. And so I was the one who had asked about the elemental thing. Mm-hmm. And so thank you for sharing that. But I wanted to find out, so my first question is that, like, if you had to pick, like, a number one way that definitely heals a leaky gut, what would that be?
4-week water fast.
Four weeks.
It's not, you know, it's not accessible for most people to do that. But I mean, like, really giving it a break can be very helpful. Or, you know, going back to elemental diet, you really want to make sure that you're getting the right nutrients when you do it. But that a liquid diet for 30 days, and you can combine that with, you know, some mucilaginous things if you tolerate certain things that will help heal. Plantain, slippery elm, marshmallow. You know, I'm a big fan of glutamine in the cases where people can tolerate it, but some people can't. And part of it is because of certain genetics that cause you to actually convert the glutamine into glutamate, which is an excitatory neurotransmitter. It makes people very anxious. So it's not an across-the-board one, but it's certainly one that many, many people can tolerate. So, you know, using, I would say, a liquid diet, there are some powdered formulas that are geared towards that. There's one from Thorne Research called MediClear Plus. And, you know, going on that alone as a liquid, that's probably one of the best ones I've seen because it doesn't have sugars and all kinds of garbage in it, and it does have gut healing nutrients in it. And I've had people go on that for periods of up to 10 days of just drinking that. And I usually have them after a few days just add some green powders to it so they get that. So there's no fiber, like, you know, broom kind of fiber that goes down there and irritates. Of course, by doing that, you're off of all the potential allergens. So that's a possibility as well.
Yeah, that seems like a great idea. So let's say I did that. So MediClear Plus, mm-hmm. and then you said, like, do that for 10 days, and then I could add some greens.
You could add the greens before that, like the powdered greens, like, say, some chlorella, spirulina, something like that. Maybe do that for 5 days, see how it's feeling. If that thing seemed calmer, try adding the greens. If the greens still keep it calm, then you're getting the greens. I don't like to have people go too long without that, unless they're just fasting, and the whole mechanism is totally different when you're fasting.
Got it. But, like, to heal the gut, like, so will this create, like, that membrane, you know, like, whatever mm-hmm. right now has a hole, will this create my hole back?
Well, it helps to heal it. Yeah, that's what they created it for. It's got nutrients in there that support healing the gut. And it also has some nutrients in there that support phase 2 liver detoxification.
All right, beautiful. Okay, so I will do that. My second question is so I'm not necessarily overweight if you look at me, but I tend to carry, like, a lot of my fat percentage is quite high, and it's been for a long time, and I have lots of toxins stored in my fat. So I bought a infrared sauna. But I wanted to ask you, how do I actually get my fat cells to release the fat toxins, okay, in a healthy way, so it doesn't hurt me, because I don't necessarily have the best draining because of, you know, lymph nodes removed and various things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's a tough question. Because that's like the million-dollar question of the day is, how do we help people to release their fat in a healthy way? On the extreme ends, I've worked with people who, as soon as they would go into fat burning, and they had a lot of fat to lose, they had so much toxicity in there and so much impairment in their gut that they felt miserable. So they'd lose 5 pounds and then, like, you know, wouldn't be able to speak because it affected them neurologically. So it is something to be careful about. I do think that this Thorne kind of thing, that Thorne product, is supporting your liver pathways while you're releasing. You will lose weight while you do it. You will burn fat because it's not calorie sufficient to keep you, you know, if you were real skinny and I had to add to it, I'd be adding some other things to it to give you calories, but it's not. So you will definitely lose weight doing that. And you're doing it in a way where the nutrients are there to support the liver detoxification. Now, you can add to that, you know, drinking liver support type things. So making sure that you're, you know, dandelion tea, for example, would go really well with that. You know, burdock tea, the various and sundry things. I think there's already milk thistle in that product, which helps support the liver. So those things are there. You know, not knowing your genetics, I'm kind of shooting in the dark here. So if you have some genetic pathways that are have some blockages in detoxification, it would be looking at what those are and supporting them nutritionally. But again, this is why I like that Thorn product so much, is it's so nutritionally dense that it most likely covers the bases there.
Beautiful. Beautiful. You have given me great information. I will do that. Thank you. Thank you so much, Dr. Rita Marie.
You are so welcome. Good luck and make sure you report back with us.
I will.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. So I'm going to see if there's anybody else on that has a question. Remember, it's star 2 that raises your hand, and I'll see your hand up. And then I'm going to go back to the Q&A, and then I'll go to the chat. I always do the chat last because it's like, it's overwhelming. It goes by so fast, I can't keep up with it. It's a lot there. Okay, so let's see who's – okay, so I have a few more. I have Sandy and Simone. Let's see, Vanessa, I got okay, there. Whoops. Okay, and Sharon. Let me just try to get to the right spot here. Jeannie. Okay, so we had Vanessa's, Jeannie from ERC. I wanted to ask about the nutrigenomics class. I don't need for you to read my genetics since we've done that, but will there be other new information for us? Yeah, so here's the thing. I have signed up with this company that has, you know, advanced training in nutrigenomics. And I have access to a special report that they're doing. So I will have run mine through that, and I'm going to share that with everybody because it kind of helps us to lump them better. It'll give you an opportunity to see if it's a report that you want to run on your current raw data. And what I find is that on those calls, even if you've already had it, because we went through it privately, but there's always some new things that come up. There's always some, you know, new knowledge or whatever. So, you know, it's probably a good use of your time to at least come to one of those sessions for sure. Sandy, can you talk about general guidelines? So if there's certain vegetables that you don't like, for instance, I didn't see asparagus on your list. That's so funny. I didn't have asparagus on my list. Asparagus is a good one. You know what? Here's the thing. I'm going to just share with you. This may be TMI. Asparagus. There's a gene that if you have this gene, then when you eat asparagus, your urine has a certain smell to it. And I have that gene. And so while I like eating asparagus, I don't like the after effects in my urine. So I don't eat it all that much. And so I apologize if I left it off, but asparagus is definitely good. So in terms of general diet guidelines, there's general guidelines, and then there's, you know, how to personalize it for you. So there's certain things that we all should be avoiding, right? The processed foods, the things that tend towards creating allergic type responses or sensitivity type responses, you know, the gluten, the dairy, at least initially. You know, I always put people on an elimination diet and eliminate the top 7, gluten, dairy, corn, soy, eggs, peanuts, and sugar. Vegetables, right? Some people don't tolerate raw vegetables because of the state of their gut. And so then we lightly steam them. One guideline I'll throw in there, if you're going to lightly steam your cruciferous vegetables, cut them first and let them sit for about 45 minutes, because when you do that, it activates this enzyme called myrosinase, which then converts to it then converts the chemicals, the precursors, into sulforaphane in the food, and it's very protective, so you can do it that way. But yeah, some people need to go off of all raw foods for a month, and I'm, you know, I'm heavy duty into raw foods. I probably eat 90% of my food is raw, yet I put people on a no raw for a month, you know, unless it's of course a juice without the fiber, because we want to help heal the gut. So it really depends, right? So certain vegetables I don't like, personally, I will tell you, I love Brussels sprouts. He cooked in certain ways, but my husband noticed that whenever he made a stir fry or a soup or something, he'd always see this pile of Brussels sprouts off to the side. I didn't even know I was doing that. So I don't really care for them, like just steamed, but I really love them, like roasted, for example. So, you know, my personal preferences may have gotten into my making list that I just, those vegetables were out of the mind. But most vegetables are great. I would say people with oxalate sensitivities need to be careful with spinach. Notice I didn't say avoid spinach, but be careful that spinach isn't your only green, because that's what happens. People go, oh, yeah, I eat tons of spinach. But let's get some variety in there. Yeah. Yeah, I hope that answered your question, because I was kind of vague with talk about general diet guidelines. Sharon, in Body Balance, have labs back. What's the next step so I know what to do with them? Do you look at them and advise on treatment? No. So you bring them to one of our calls, that's the Zoom call, that's at the beginning of the month, or you bring them to the integration call, and then we're going to talk about how to read them in general. So I'm going to be doing a class for everybody. I cannot read labs for everybody in the program. You have to be in my ERC Gold Plus program for me to be able to do that, because it's a very time consuming and I just don't have enough hours in the day to do that. But what I do is I empower you to be able to understand what's going on in them. And we'll have one of our integration sessions set up so that, you know, I can go through them and share with you what these different things mean. Okay. And there's also, I've given you some documents in the In Body Balance, and on the next call, I'm planning on showing you those documents and how to use those documents to understand your lab results, because I've tried to make it easy for you to at least get a general idea. Kamjeet, I'm in treatment, okay. Okay, so you got on, and I think we went through that, yep. Let's see, Gail. How are the Libre 4? Okay, you asked that already. Simone, on the subject of water, I've started using homeopathic rehydration drops. I want to find out how much of that type of water per day should I be using, my total intake, or split it up. I would probably do it. I mean, you could start by doing it in all of it and then go half and half. Yeah. Sandy wants to know, what do you think about taking melatonin supplements at bedtime? Here's the thing with that. You know, I'm cautious about taking hormones. I'm not against taking hormones, but I want to make sure that you're doing things first that are helping to stimulate your own body's production of it. If you are like miserable and can't fall asleep, it's certainly something to try, but I want you to try that along with the other sleep hygiene type of things, you know, stop eating 3 hours before bedtime, do something calming and soothing before bed, turn and dim down the lights to stimulate melatonin, get off the computer within 2 hours of bedtime, no TV within 2 hours of bedtime. So all those things are described in the sleep module in the blood sugar balancing part. So I would look there. And certainly if you've been tested and your melatonin level is definitely low, then taking it, but taking small amounts with the intention of helping your body to produce more is a good thing. Sometimes it's missing certain nutrients. So melatonin is produced from serotonin, which is produced from 5-hydroxytryptophan, which is an amino acid, and you need sufficient vitamin B6. And then that's produced from tryptophan, which is the dietary form. So I'm a big fan of making sure that you have all those nutrients. And I personally like to go with getting somebody on maybe some tryptophan and B6 to see if that helps with the sleep and stimulates the melatonin. But I'm not against it. I just think it depends on your situation. Simone, I'd like to find out if you recommend any supplements before having an x-ray done to negate the effects of the radiation. Well, you can't negate the effects of the radiation, but you can minimize the effects of the radiation. I would say antioxidant type things, vitamin C, certainly important. I would say things like seed vegetables can be very helpful because they tend to draw out radio waves and things like that. So I would say those kind of things could be helpful. And Janice, I've been taking methylpro 15 milligrams and B-complex for methylation. What is recommended here? I'm not sure what you mean, what is recommended here. So you're taking these. Are you asking me if that's appropriate? And I don't know because you're not giving me information about you. So here's the thing. Do you have MTHFR and MTRR genetic variations? Do you have a COMT genetic variation? All of those things play in, right? So those can be excellent. That's a very high dose of methyl, the methyl pro at 15. I think it's about 15 milligrams of 5-MTHF, which is the methylated folate. And it depends on what else is going on. So my questions for you would be, what prompted you to take it? And what's your response been? How do you feel? I'm generally a fan of starting low and moving up and not having people take more supplementation than they actually need. So, yeah, if you can answer those questions, I can give you more information. All right. So no more questions there. I'm going to go back to see who's on the phone, and then I'm going to go back in. Okay, there, it's refreshing finally. Wow. Okay. I'll come back there. Let's see who's on the phone. I have Mary A. So I'm assuming Mary Ann in Chapel Hill.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, it's actually Mary Agnes. Yes.
Mary Agnes. Okay, great.
Yeah. So this is my first week, and so I'm basically pretty confused. I've never been one who I've always
taken body balance, Mary Agnes? Are you in body balance? You're in body balance?
In body balance.
Great. And this is your first week. Okay.
Yes, this is my first day to do these. I took all the assessments, and the only issues that I had with, which I knew, was in metabolic. I was told several years ago that I had a metabolic syndrome where my metabolism was just slow. And so I've seen my blood sugar is in the normal range, but it's on the high. So my question has related to planning my food, what do I do about carbohydrates? Because that seems to be, I don't eat sugars, so I wanted to have the amount of carbohydrates lessen, but still have it adequate.
Good question. Now, so this is your first day, you did the assessments, and you haven't gone through any of the other pieces yet, correct?
What do you mean by other pieces?
Well, there's a module one, the very first part of module one is the assessments, and then after that there's like 9, 10, 11, something like that, other.
Oh, yes, I've gone through the stress and the heart math. And
great. Okay, that's what I was going to tell you, is that the stress and the sleep are super important, as well as the food and as well as movement. So, you know, going through and getting those in place are really going to help. Metabolic syndrome is usually reserved for when someone has a slightly elevated fasting blood sugar, and that would be usually a little bit over 100, but not, you know, all the way to 120, but also some issues with cholesterol being elevated or triglycerides, hypertension, any of those. So does that ring a bell? Do you have elevations in those things?
I have elevations in both the cholesterol as well. You said what was the first one? I don't have over 100. It's like 95, 96 or 7, something like that.
Yeah, so it's getting up there. It's definitely.
Yes.
So here's the thing, though, and you'll learn more about this when we head into the blood sugar module. So you're right at the beginning, and there's a lot to learn here. The fasting blood sugar is going to be one of the last things to shift. So the fact that it's in the 90s means that you're already in that, you know, quote-unquote danger zone, that you already have a blood sugar imbalance, for sure, when the fasting is up in the 90s, even though medicine thinks that that's fine. When we look at statistics, when we look at patterns, we see that as soon as it goes above 90 as a fasting, the incidence of cardiovascular disease goes up, the risk of cardiovascular disease goes up. So you're heading in the right direction. I would say, and this is true for everybody, and the more I study this and the more I talk about this, I think everybody from the time they're 12 years old should get a baseline of two specific sugar markers that can be, as soon as they start to go up, then we know that there's a problem happening. Insulin, and the other one is called hemoglobin A1C. So I would... ask your doctor to run those. If your doctor won't run them, go to runmylabs.com and just order them. You'll have to pay out of pocket, but they're not very expensive, and get them done. And this will give us a baseline of where you're going. Now, going back to your initial question, I mean, I got off track because I want to make sure you're aware that all those other things have a huge impact on your blood sugar. And in terms of carbohydrates, there is, let's see, I'm trying to think of where that list might live. What you're going to be doing, and as we take you through this, is you're going to be learning how to test your own sugar after eating, and we're going to make like a, almost like a map. I call it postprandial glucose mapping. Postprandial meaning after eating. So, you know, after meal glucose mapping, we're actually going to map it out, and you're going to test it and say, well, quinoa is a really good carbohydrate for me because it, my blood sugar doesn't go up, but holy cow, rice makes my sugar go up to 170. Not good. You're going to learn all this step by step by step. So there, it's not something I could teach you in, you know, 5-10 minutes on a call, but that's what we're going to be doing. And so in terms of carbohydrates right now, it's, you know, for many people, certainly getting off of gluten and flour products, like no pastas and breads, that's going to be a good way to go. Whole grains. You might be fine with rice. You may not be fine with rice, brown rice. You might be fine with quinoa. Many people are. You might be fine with lentils, but not white beans. And those are the things that are going to come out as we test. And you're going to figure out the right mapping of the carbohydrates for you, right? So usually a starting point would be to look at the things that are the highest in sugar, the fruits that are highest in sugar, and eliminate those. Stick with blueberries and strawberries and things like that. In terms of grains, get rid of all the flour products and stick with just, you know, whole grain, like quinoa, millet, even brown rice. As we refine this, you're going to start to test for yourself and find out which ones work for you. It's fascinating, the differences between people. I've had some people who can eat 6 bananas and it doesn't budge their blood sugar, but if they eat 1 corn chip, their sugar shoots up 30 points. And it's like, you know what I mean? It's so different from person to person. That you just, we're going to, and you're going to learn how to do that. We're going to take you through that.
Well, I have a question because yesterday I did, I wanted to do some lab work that I get my labs done every year. So I did, someone had told me about the A1C, so I got it and the level on it was less than 5.7, which is still at the high point.
It's too high. It's high. Yeah.
What
was it? Was it 5.7? Was it 5.6? Was it 5.0?
5.7. It was 5.7.
It was 5.7. So that says to me that you have...
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's 5.6, but that's close. 5.6,
yes. So it's right under it. Yeah, you're having issues here. We want to see it at 5. At 5.6, that means that your average blood glucose across the day is about 118. And what that means is that when you average, it means that, you know, you combine while you're sleeping, which should be low, with after eating, that you're getting numbers that are going to be above 118, 119. Probably some of the numbers you're getting are in the 130s, 40s, 50s even. And it's balancing out the lower numbers. And that's high, right? I like to see the hemoglobin A1C at 5. Even below 5 is fine. I have 4.5 even to 5, but 4.8 to 5 is probably where I like to see it, right? That's where we're targeting for. And that you will, once you can map it out and figure out which of these foods are raising it, you're going to bring it down. We had a guy who had a 10, and he's now down at 5.2.
Wow. Now, is the C-reactive protein anything? They also suggested that I do that.
Yeah, C-reactive protein is an inflammatory marker, and I like that. You know, really good baseline stuff that most docs don't run in the annual labs that I think are really critical, especially as we start to get older and we, you know, we're concerned about, you know, long-term type things. So I would say C-reactive protein, hemoglobin A1C, homocysteine is another one. Did they mention that? Homocysteine, and then insulin.
Okay.
Those are ones that are going to really give you an idea of the health strength structure of your cardiovascular system and your blood sugar system, the metabolic system.
Okay. Now, I have one other, question. I added, it's called lipospheric R alpha lipoic acid. Have you heard of that with Live On Laboratories?
Yeah.
Is that something
I mean, it can be, absolutely. It definitely has some literature that supports its use in blood sugar balance, but there's a whole lot of else. So, and we're going to get into this in the blood sugar part, but the, some of the nutrients that you may want to look into right now, in addition, would be chromium,
mm-hmm.
magnesium, and DHA. That's my trifecta trio that I usually start people with.
Okay, chromium,
magnesium,
DHA.
And DHA.
Magnesium.
Yeah, not DHEA, DHA. They're two different things. DHA. Yes. Yeah.
And what was the other one besides DHA, magnesium, and?
Chromium.
Oh, chromium. Now, if my, I take Shaklee protein and I've taken it for years, I think those have, I think it has that.
Probably very little. All right. So let me give you some doses, right? So on chromium, somewhere in the neighborhood of 800 micrograms a day.
Okay.
On magnesium, somewhere in the neighborhood of 400 to 800 milligrams a day.
Okay.
And DHA, somewhere in the neighborhood of 350 to 500 milligrams a day.
Okay, perfect.
Okay?
Okay, thank you. Yep.
Yeah. And here's what I'm going to say. Like, if somebody says to me, I'm already taking those things, I would say it probably you're not taking enough.
Okay.
Most likely. I mean, it could be that you're sufficient, but if you're taking something already, it usually is because you're just not taking enough.
Okay. Perfect. Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Bye. Okay. All right. I'm going to go back to the Q&A, and then I'm going to go to the chat. Cindy. Okay. Oh, wait. There's a couple more. Let's see. That just came in. Okay, so Mary Ellen, my ERC, my lab tests always show that my bilirubin is high. Should I be concerned? It depends on how high. There is a condition called Gilbert's, G-I-L-B-E-R-T. Sounds like Gilbert's, but it's Gilbert's syndrome. And it's a very minor elevation, somewhere up to like 1 on your bilirubin, 1.1. It should be like down at point something, 0.2 or 0.3. If it's as high as 1 or 1.1, then it's usually Gilbert's. If it's very high, yeah, that's a buildup. Your body's not breaking down the bilirubin. It could be a liver issue. It could be an issue with cholesterol buildup and you're not eliminating it. So it should be investigated. But if it's just slightly high, it probably isn't. I mean, there's genetic components. Now, there may be some downsides to it, but, you know, overall getting in balance will oftentimes take care of that. And I've seen that number go down in people once they, you know, got on a really good, healthy, balanced diet for them. Cindy.
It's 1.8.
Hers is 1.8?
It's 1.8, and I don't. Mary Ellen has the JAK2 So I didn't know if that had anything to do with it.
It could, absolutely. I would be looking at cholesterol. I was also looking at ApoE as well, and any of the fat metabolism type genes. Yeah, and not knowing, you know, where are you at right now with the program, Mary Ellen, and how much, what am I trying to say? Like what you've implemented and what you haven't. You know, some people are like 8 months into ERC and they're still working on getting rid of the gluten or, you know, getting rid of the M&Ms or whatever. So I don't know where you're at with that. And I would highly recommend, Mary Ellen, a better approach might be come to the next ERC call, which I think it's either next week or the week after. I think it might be the week after next. And just get on there and let's chat. Let's like face to face. Let's look at some of these numbers. We can pull up some of your numbers and see. Oops, I just lost my. Can you still hear me? My screen went blank and it said, oh, snap. It's gone. All right. Can you guys still hear me? Lynn, can you still hear me?
Yep.
Okay, good. I didn't believe that. Good. Yeah, so that's what I would recommend, Mary Ellen. Then we can really dig into it. And come to the come to the nutrigenomics class too. Because when you get on those calls, we get to really, you know, really get to know you well. And I feel like I haven't gotten to know you as well as I have would like to.
So one of the things they told her too is that sometimes it's your liver not clearing out the bilirubin.
Yeah.
And so told her, you know, like good fiber things can help her with that. So you'll see, the reason I mention this is you'll see her question, how do you clear bilirubin?
Yeah, so here's the, that's great stuff, Lynn. And here's what I would recommend. In the body freedom part of ERC, there's an environment section. And in the environment section, we talk about detoxification. We talk about foods that help support the liver, foods that get in the way of liver detoxification. So you can start there. There's also a video on everyday detox. So some of the things you can be doing to reduce your toxic load so your liver doesn't have to work so hard. Super. Cindy says, I have that gene also. Which gene? Were we talking about ApoE? We talked about a couple of them. How do I find out about the report that deciphers our DNA data? Okay, so up until just recently, what I've been using, well, up until like back in November, I was using Stratagene and Metabolic Healing as the reports that I would run it through. So if you've done 23andMe, you download your raw data and you upload them to these reports, and then you go through that. Since then, I discovered a service called Genetic Detoxification, and they make a really nice report that is organized in such a way that you can tell what those genes are related to. And then there's a book that you can buy on Amazon related to it, and on the report, it tells you what pages to do to look that up. If you came to our SHINE conference, I gave out these beautiful charts to help you to see what all the different SNPs mean from that report and go there. Now, this other thing I just recently hooked up with, and I'm going to be running mine over the next few weeks and understanding it before I like to learn things well before I teach them, but I really like the glimpse I got of this report, and I think you guys are going to really, really like it. They also do the genetic testing for those of you who haven't gotten it yet, using the old way that 23andMe did. Those of you who have done your 23andMe within the last year or so, or maybe even 2 years, they've updated the what they call the chip that they use to read it, and they've eliminated a lot of really important genes. This test will run all the ones that 23andMe used to do, plus a few extras. So I'll be letting people know about that as I learn about it. But for now, if you have your raw data, $30, you can go to geneticdetoxification.com and run their report. And then they will tell you when you run the report what the name of the book is, how to get it. You can just go to Amazon and get, I think it's just I don't know if it's genetic interpretation or something like that. And then it'll be able to help you with that. Now, for those of you who want help with actually reading it, a couple of things you can do. One is you can join our ERC program, and we do that on our calls. We help you read that. At the highest levels, the ERC Gold, I'm on there with you and do it one-on-one like we did with Jamie. Like Jamie said, she already had that done. The other possibility is to sign up with one of our coaches, and we'll figure out which one is the best at reading it and do some private consultations with them to help you decipher your DNA data. So those are ways to do it. Okay. See if there's more. Okay, I don't see any more there. And no more hands, so I'm going to go to chat. Finally, yay! So Lynn put up the link to geneticdetoxification.com. UV light helps to break down, like when babies are born and they have jaundice, they will be put under the UV lights, and that helps to break it down, so that's a possibility as well. But it's most likely something going with the liver. I'm looking to see any other fun questions or comments. Yeah, babies and billy lights. Good. Let's see. Okay, so some of these Lynn just took right from here, so that's great. Thank you for doing that. All right. And those of you who are in body balance, there is a link on the site that you can sign up for. We've offered a significant discount over what we normally would charge for a private, you know, personalized consultation with one of our coaches. So what we have you do is fill out a form, a getting to know you form. You submit that, and then Lynn will look at it and see which of our coaches is going to be the best one for you based on what's going on with you. Okay. Okay. The thing with broadcast and not, it used to be Firefox that didn't allow it. And it may be an old version of, maybe Firefox does now, but if you haven't upgraded your version of it. Lynn Rose says she agrees with me. She likes them roasted. That's how I like it. Not overcooked, but roasted. That's a good idea. Run them through the food processor, grate them, and use them in a slaw. I like that idea. A compound that gives fruits and vegetables their red color also works to lower bilirubin. Great. And Lynn mentioned those hydration drops. There are some people who drink a lot of water. They're like, I'm drinking more than half my body weight in fluid ounces, and I still, you know, I feel dehydrated. I'm constantly thirsty. And it's a lot of times it's the way the water has been processed, and it's not aligning properly to be absorbed into your cells well. And these rehydration drops work really well for that. And they're easy to get. Lynn, I wasn't sure what Janice's question was about MethylPro. She just stated that she's using it and wanted to know if that was a good idea, but I don't really know what, I don't really know enough, and that's what I had said. Okay. I don't see any more on the chat. Lynn, if there's any more, put them in, and I'll, okay, got that. I'm going to look to see if anybody has their hand up. I don't see it. So thank you, everybody, for being here and for all your great stuff that you've been asking. It's been a great call. Actually, we've been on for a long time. I didn't realize how late it got. So I'm going to go ahead and end because I have another call to get on. I'm going to open up your lines so you can all say goodbye to each other. And everybody, bye, everybody. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye. You're welcome.
You.
Bye.